President Obama walking now to the podium along a red carpet. The blue podium is set. Hear now the president on Syria.
My fellow Americans, tonight I want to talk to you about Syria, why it matters, and where we go from here. Over the past 2 years, what began as a series of peaceful protests against the repressive regime of Bashar al-Assad has turned into a brutal civil war. Over 100,000 people have been killed. Millions have fled the country. In that time, America has worked with allies to provide humanitarian support, to help the moderate opposition, and to shape a political settlement. But I have resisted calls for military action, because we cannot resolve someone else's civil war through force, particularly after a decade of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. The situation profoundly changed, though, on August 21st, when Assad's government gassed to death over 1,000 people, including hundreds of children. The images from this massacre are sickening. Men, women, children lying in rows, killed by poison gas. Others foaming at the mouth, gasping for breath. A father clutching his dead children, imploring them to get up and walk. On that terrible night, the world saw in gruesome detail the terrible nature of chemical weapons and why the overwhelming majority of humanity has declared them off limits, a crime against humanity, and a violation of the laws of war. This was not always the case. In World War I, American GIs were among the many thousands killed by deadly gas in the trenches of Europe. In World War II, the Nazis used gas to inflict the horror of the Holocaust. Because these weapons can kill on a mass scale, with no distinction between soldier and infant, the civilized world has spent a century working to ban them. And in 1997, the United States Senate overwhelmingly approved an international agreement prohibiting the use of chemical weapons, now joined by 189 governments that represent 98% of humanity. On August 21st, these basic rules were violated, along with our sense of common humanity. No one disputes that chemical weapons were used in Syria. The world saw thousands of videos, cell phone pictures, and social media accounts from the attack. And humanitarian organizations told stories of hospitals packed with people who had symptoms of poison gas. Moreover, we know the Assad regime was responsible. In the days leading up to August 21st, we know that Assad's chemical weapons personnel prepared for an attack near an area where they mix sarin gas. They distributed gas masks to their troops. Then they fired rockets from a regime-controlled area into 11 neighborhoods that the regime has been trying to wipe clear of opposition forces. Shortly after those rockets landed, the gas spread, and hospitals filled with the dying and the wounded. We know senior figures in Assad's military machine reviewed the results of the attack, and the regime increased their shelling of the same neighborhoods in the days that followed. We've also studied samples of blood and hair from people at the site that tested positive for sarin. When dictators commit atrocities, they depend upon the world to look the other way until those horrifying pictures fade from memory. But these things happened. The facts cannot be denied. The question now is what the United States of America and the international community is prepared to do about it. Because what happened to those people, to those children, is not only a violation of international law, it's also a danger to our security. Let me explain why. If we fail to act, the Assad regime will see no reason to stop using chemical weapons. As the ban against these weapons erodes, other tyrants will have no reason to think twice about acquiring poison gas and using them. Over time, our troops would again face the prospect of chemical warfare on the battlefield. And it could be easier for terrorist organizations to obtain these weapons and to use them to attack civilians. If fighting spills beyond Syria's borders, these weapons could threaten allies like Turkey, Jordan, and Israel. and a failure to stand against the use of chemical weapons would weaken prohibitions against other weapons of mass destruction and embolden Assad's ally, Iran, which must decide whether to ignore international law by building a nuclear weapon or to take a more peaceful path. This is not a world we should accept. This is what's at stake. And that is why, after careful deliberation, I determined that it is in the national security interests of the United States to respond to the Assad regime's use of chemical weapons through a targeted military strike. The purpose of this strike would be to deter Assad from using chemical weapons, to degrade his regime's ability to use them, and to make clear to the world that we will not tolerate their use. That's my judgment as Commander-in-Chief. But I'm also the President of the world's oldest constitutional democracy. So even though I possess the authority to order military strikes, I believed it was right, in the absence of a direct or imminent threat to our security, to take this debate to Congress. I believe our democracy is stronger when the President acts with the support of Congress. And I believe that America acts more effectively abroad when we stand together. This is especially true after a decade that put more and more war-making power in the hands of the President and more burdens on the shoulders of our troops while sidelining the people's representatives from the critical decisions about when we use force. Now, I know that after the terrible toll of Iraq and Afghanistan, the idea of any military action, no matter how limited, is not going to be popular. After all, I've spent 4.5 years working to end wars, not to start them. Our troops are out of Iraq. Our troops are coming home from Afghanistan. And I know Americans want all of us in Washington, especially me, to concentrate on the task of building our nation here at home, putting people back to work, educating our kids, growing our middle class. It's no wonder, then, that you're asking hard questions. So let me answer some of the most important questions that I've heard from members of Congress and that I've read in letters that you've sent to me. First, many of you have asked, won't this put us on a slippery slope to another war? One man wrote to me that we are still recovering from our involvement in Iraq. A veteran put it more bluntly, this nation is sick and tired of war. My answer is simple. I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan. I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo. This would be a targeted strike to achieve a clear objective, deterring the use of chemical weapons and degrading Assad's capabilities. Others have asked whether it's worth acting if we don't take out Assad. Some members of Congress have said, there's no point in simply doing a pinprick strike in Syria. Let me make something clear. The United States military doesn't do pinpricks. Even a limited strike will send a message to Assad that no other nation can deliver. I don't think we should remove another dictator with force. We learned from Iraq that doing so makes us responsible for all that comes next. But a targeted strike can make Assad or any other dictator think twice before using chemical weapons. Other questions involve the dangers of retaliation. We don't dismiss any threats, but the Assad regime does not have the ability to seriously threaten our military. Any other retaliation they might seek is in line with threats that we face every day. Neither Assad nor his allies have any interest in escalation that would lead to his demise. And our ally Israel can defend itself with overwhelming force, as well as the unshakable support of the United States of America. Many of you have asked a broader question. Why should we get involved at all in a place that's so complicated, and where, as one person wrote to me, those who come after Assad may be enemies of human rights? It's true that some of Assad's opponents are extremists. But al-Qaeda will only draw strength in a more chaotic Syria if people there see the world doing nothing to prevent innocent civilians from being gassed to death. The majority of the Syrian people and the Syrian opposition we work with just want to live in peace, with dignity and freedom. And the day after any military action, we would redouble our efforts to achieve a political solution that strengthens those who reject the forces of tyranny and extremism. Finally, many of you have asked, why not leave this to other countries or seek solutions short of force? As several people wrote to me, we should not be the world's policeman. I agree, and I have a deeply held preference for peaceful solutions. Over the last 2 years, my administration has tried diplomacy and sanctions, warnings and negotiations, but chemical weapons were still used by the Assad regime. However, over the last few days, we've seen some encouraging signs. In part because of the credible threat of U.S. military action, as well as constructive talks that I had with President Putin, the Russian government has indicated a willingness to join with the international community in pushing Assad to give up his chemical weapons. The Assad regime has now admitted that it has these weapons, and even said they joined the Chemical Weapons Convention, which prohibits their use. It's too early to tell whether this offer will succeed. And any agreement must verify that the Assad regime keeps its commitments. But this initiative has the potential to remove the threat of chemical weapons without the use of force, particularly because Russia is one of Assad's strongest allies. I have therefore asked the leaders of Congress to postpone a vote to authorize the use of force while we pursue this diplomatic path. I'm sending Secretary of State John Kerry to meet his Russian counterpart on Thursday. And I will continue my own discussions with President Putin. I've spoken to the leaders of two of our closest allies, France and the United Kingdom, and we will work together in consultation with Russia and China to put forward a resolution at the UN Security Council requiring Assad to give up his chemical weapons and to ultimately destroy them under international control. We'll also give UN inspectors the opportunity to report their findings about what happened on August 21st. And we will continue to rally support from allies, from Europe to the Americas, from Asia to the Middle East, who agree on the need for action. Meanwhile, I've ordered our military to maintain their current posture, to keep the pressure on Assad, and to be in a position to respond if diplomacy fails. And tonight I give thanks again to our military and their families for their incredible strength and sacrifices. My fellow Americans, for nearly seven decades, the United States has been the anchor of global security. This has meant doing more than forging international agreements. It has meant enforcing them. The burdens of leadership are often heavy, but the world's a better place because we have borne them. And so, to my friends on the right, I ask you to reconcile your commitment to America's military might with a failure to act when a cause is so plainly just. To my friends on the left, I ask you to reconcile your belief in freedom and dignity for all people with those images of children writhing in pain and going still on a cold hospital floor. For sometimes resolutions and statements of condemnation are simply not enough. Indeed, I'd ask every member of Congress and those of you watching at home tonight to view those videos of the attack, and then ask, what kind of world will we live in if the United States of America sees a dictator brazenly violate international law with poison gas, and we choose to look the other way? Franklin Roosevelt once said, our national determination to keep free of foreign wars and foreign entanglements cannot prevent us from feeling deep concern when ideals and principles that we have cherished are challenged. Our ideals and principles, as well as our national security, are at stake in Syria, along with our leadership of a world where we seek to ensure that the worst weapons will never be used. America's not the world's policeman. Terrible things happen across the globe, and it is beyond our means to right every wrong. But when, with modest effort and risk, we can stop children from being gassed to death and thereby make our own children safer over the long run, I believe we should act. That's what makes America different. That's what makes us exceptional. With humility, but with resolve, let us never lose sight of that essential truth. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Live from the White House, President Obama's address to the nation on Syria. He said the world has seen the evidence of chemical weapons. He said it's a danger to American national security, and failure to respond, the president said, would increase the likelihood chemical weapons would be used again, weaken prohibitions against other weapons of mass destruction. President Obama tonight pledged he would not put American boots on the ground in Syria. Instead, he sought to convince Americans a targeted strike to deter the use of chemical weapons is the right course of action for a country tired of war. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News.
Escape the talking points and join me, Michael Savage, inside the Savage Nation right here on the only conservative station in the Bay Area, Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
The Savage Nation, weeknights at 6 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO. San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, a Cumulus station.
Serious business. It's not time to play the peanut gallery. But, you know, I feel I reacted the way most of you would be reacting in the living room watching this man. With his absurdities that he just, his absurdities and contradictions. Talk softly and carry a limp stick. If you care to comment either on the president's speech or on my commentary, the phone number here is 855-400-7282 across America. The lines are open at 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855-400-7282. Let's begin at the top. I have a couple of questions. Is Russia's offer to help Syria give up its chemical weapons a fake? Is it a Russian ruse? Or let's go to the broader picture. Is it all a fake? Is it all a fake? Because we know we can't trust Putin, given that Putin is a former KGB chief. We also know we can't trust Kerry, because Kerry is a known liar. We also know we can't trust the word that comes out of Obama's mouth, because he's only a politician. So what is it that we the people are supposed to believe? That's the real question here. On the strike itself, John Kerry said it will be unbelievably small. Then the president says, no, it's not a pinprick. Then Kerry goes back and says, we don't do pinpricks. That's number one. Then he says there's a mission to take out the chemical weapons. But he doesn't say how he's going to take out the chemical weapons. If the chemical weapons have been moved to over 1,000 sites, how is he going to take out 1,000 sites other than putting special forces, meaning boots, on the ground? Huh? Does anyone have an answer to that? Now, emotionally, you may feel good when you sit at home and watch shock and awe as Damascus starts to burn. And you'll say, whoa, that'll show him. That'll show him. Wow, I feel good. That Syria is burning to the ground. How do you feel about the president's speech? Do you feel encouraged by it? Do you believe any of it? Do you think that we should be the world's policemen? You know how I feel on it. I'm an anti-war conservative. I believe we should go to war when our national interests are threatened. I do not see our national interests threatened. Moreover, I don't trust President Obama. I have no reason to trust President Putin. I certainly know that Kerry makes things up as he goes along. But you know, at the end of the day, even if Obama did inadvertently back himself into a corner by, as I said, talking softly and carrying a limp stick. Yeah, we've gone from Teddy Roosevelt, who said, I think, walk softly and carry a big stick. Well, now maybe Obama will be remembered by this adage, talk softly and carry a limp stick. You can call me with your commentary, either on my commentary or his commentary, by calling the commentary line at 855-400-SAVAGE. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Well, you heard the president's speech tonight. I wasn't as outraged as I normally get. I try to hold my fire because the fact is I felt he did what exactly what we all thought he was going to do. He made a speech to cover his tracks. He made a speech so that the liberal historians will make him into the greatest president since God knows. You fill in the blank. But the fact of the matter is he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He's a well-known leftist, a radical. He doesn't believe in war. And here he is trying to drag us into a war in which we have no business, in my opinion. The phone number is 855-400-7282. Let's begin with our callers on the East Coast tonight on the Savage Nation. Dan on WABC, go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, how are you? I just want to preface this by saying I typically don't believe anything that Obama says. So that's a given. What my concern is that if we don't step in situations like this, it creates a power vacuum. And then who...
Well, hold on. Let me take it, what you said, a power vacuum. But I will remind you that acting precipitously can have us vacuumed by our own power, as has happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. I've heard the power vacuum argument, and I will remind everyone listening to this show that using power in the wrong way at the wrong time on the wrong, let us say, enemy, can have us vacuumed by our own power. We got sucked into Iraq, and we got nothing for it. We've got bogged down in Afghanistan, we got nothing for it. And earlier than that, we got sucked into Vietnam, and we got nothing for it, but 45 to 50,000 dead and 150 to 250,000 wounded. So, yeah, we got to worry about a power vacuum. But as I say, we can be vacuumed by our own sense of power. That's what we're all concerned about, Dan.
So you do feel like Syria is a trap to suck us into something bigger, that this is not...
I've heard the same rhetoric since Vietnam. It started with Johnson sending advisors to Vietnam, promising the American people there would be no troops sent in there. It started with 200 Marines, then 800 Marines. And then as they were knocked off, they sent in, you know, 3,000, then another battalion, then another brigade, then another division. This is how wars escalate, Dan. The problem is we have a new generation that doesn't even know what we've been through. We have...
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
And what we have to do is make clear to people that this is... We're not talking about war. We're not going to war. We will not have... people at risk in that way.
Yep. Suddenly it's 1969. The world has learned nothing. And of all people, I mean, Obama learns nothing from history because he believes the world began when he was born. But Kerry, who allegedly did win a Purple Heart for a Riverine episode, which some questioned, we won't go into that. He was there. He was on a Riverine mission. He got a scratch and got a Purple Heart for it. He should know that the Vietnam War started in the same exact way. We were told that advisors would go in. Don't you remember? Many of you don't remember. At first it was advisors, like a couple of hundred. And then it was more and more and more. This is how wars begin. Either you... See, the thing... that I'm an armchair general. Let's be clear. I'm an armchair general. Everyone in America is an armchair actor, an armchair producer, an armchair general. That's... we all do it. If we have a brain, that's what we do. Let's not fool ourselves. So, the question is this. What do I, as an armchair general, think? I think that a military should be used as a last resort, not a first resort. That's number one. I believe diplomacy should be used first and foremost. In fact, it's Clausewitz who wrote that war is the outcome of diplomacy that failed. Read your Clausewitz. That goes way back. Well over 100 years. War should be used after diplomacy fails. Now, Obama threatened war first and then got backed into a corner by his own rhetoric and now said he's suddenly a big diplomat. He's going to try diplomacy. My gut feeling is he's going to go to war anyway because that's what they have determined they want to do. Let's just look at the issue of the chemical weapons. He said no one disputes that chemical weapons were used. Well, I'm not so sure about that. There are mixed reports coming up from various and sundry and legitimate press sources. We still don't know how many died. They keep saying 1,500, and yet Doctors Without Borders said that 450 died. That's number one. The actual gas that was used, some don't know what it is. Some say it was definitely not sarin gas, including Doctors Without Borders. And a report came out just the other day from a very legitimate source where they had monitored Assad himself in his war room, where he told his men, do not use sarin gas. do not use the sarin gas. So maybe it was a rogue element within his own military who did it. Okay, then you could say the buck stops here. He's responsible. You can carry that line. But maybe, just maybe, that some of the rumors about the so-called opposition doing this themselves to people is also true. Why? You would put it past people who burn churches and convert Christians and execute soldiers and throw them into open pits from using gas on their own people? Don't be so sure here. And that's why I'm saying again, no matter what your instincts may be, and some of your instincts are very humanitarian and good, and we've got to do something, those are horrible images. Everyone was moved by them. Everyone. But be very careful. When two mad pit bulls are fighting each other to the death, and you put your hand in between them, you're going to lose a finger, or you're going to lose your hand. And the finger or the hand in this case is not Obama. The finger or the hand is not Kerry. The finger or the hand are not the little men in the news media who are calling for blood. The finger or the hand that will be bitten and die are your sons, the men in the military. That's who's going to be on the ground. Make no mistake about it. Oh, you say, well, it's only going to be dropping bombs. Don't be so sure. And secondly, you want to talk about Tomahawk missiles? They will kill hundreds and hundreds of innocent Syrians. So watch out. The bigger picture is who's screwing who here? Who is fooling who here? Is it Putin, who has outsmarted Obama by playing chess to America's checkers? Is it Obama outsmarting Putin by playing chess to Putin's chess? Is it Syria screwing both parties by dragging them both into a civil war? Is it really Assad? I mean, you know, don't underestimate Assad. He's an eye surgeon. Let's start with that. He's not a community organizer. He didn't just get ahead through affirmative action. Assad's no idiot. Monster, yes. Surrounded by monsters. Terrible man. But Assad went to medical school. Legitimately highly intelligent man. He didn't get where he is by being an idiot. So maybe he's playing both parties. We don't know. But I don't believe we belong there. Secondly, and probably the most important thing I'm going to tell you tonight is something I said last week, which is this. If Assad was continuing to use whatever the chemicals were used, using them over and over and over again, no question we should go in with boots on the ground and bomb. But he's not repeatedly using the gas. This is the big lie, and this is the logical flaw in the war message coming from the idiots in the media, the idiots in the military-industrial complex, the few idiots in Congress who are paid off by the military-industrial complex, and, of course, the president himself. So listen to what I just said to you. If Assad were continuing to use chemical weapons on a regular basis, I would be right in line with, yes, bomb him, stop him, you must stop this. But they were used once. Let's take the worst case scenario. He didn't order it, his men ordered it. Okay, so it was a rogue element in the Syrian military. So what, now you punish the ordinary Syrians for a rogue element in the Syrian military? You now bomb indiscriminately and kill children, women, men, old men, people in hospitals? No, that's not what you do. I'm not exactly a pacifist, but in this case, I'm an anti-war conservative. And I will tell you that foreign entanglements are the worst thing in America's history. Almost without exception, foreign entanglements have been the worst disaster in America's history. And the exception for me has been World War II, because had Germany not been stopped, there would be no America today. Had Hitler won the war, I wouldn't be on the radio, you wouldn't be listening to a free broadcast. That was a necessary war, a wholly necessary war. There's no question about it, because our survival was at stake. For Obama to blow this out of proportion and say this is the same thing is ludicrous. Let's put it that way. Let me get some of your calls on the subject. I've got some amazing callers tonight. Let's start here in San Francisco, my home station on KSFO. Dan, you've been holding. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I would like to say that in listening to the president tonight, it's more shucking and jiving, more of the same garbage. There's a vortex of stupidity in Washington, D.C., trying to drag us into a place where we do not belong.
All right, that's a sentiment shared by millions of Americans. You're not alone in that. It's very heartfelt, and it's very straight. WABC, we go to New York now from San Francisco. Eric, line 6, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Mike. I get this. He stated tonight in his speech that there will be no boots on the ground in Syria. And to me, that leaves a whole open blank slate of whether it be Iran or wherever else he chooses to go there. In what direction?
You're saying that he didn't say no boots on the ground in Jordan, no boots on the ground in Lebanon, no boots on the ground in Iran, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, interestingly enough, there are boots on the ground in Jordan. There are 800 Marines, by the last report, waiting to go in, and they're sitting in Jordan. You know that as well as I do. I'm sure you do, correct?
Yeah, yes.
And there are 800, or at least, well, there's a reported number of 800 Marines. It could be 8,000 for all I know. What do I know?
Yeah.
There's at least 800 U.S. Marines sitting in Jordan, ready to go into Syria. So what's that all about? If that's not boots on the ground, what would you call it? Sandals on the ground?
Yes, exactly.
What are they going to run in socks through the desert?
Or barefoot.
Yeah, they're going to run. I get it. So wait, they're going to run in barefoot so that Obama's not seen as a liar. That's interesting. So they can say, well, there are no boots on the ground. We promised you there'd be no boots on the ground. They're in there barefooted. That's very good. Well, we may as well have a moment of levity, because this is not a situation that is very pleasant for anybody talking about it. Why is he supporting the opposition? Everyone who has studied this knows that of the 100,000 troops fighting Assad, there are 1,000 different organizations, or let us say groups. Did you know that the 100,000 people fighting Assad, this is roughly 100,000 opposition forces, made up or comprised of 1,000 different factions. So that means that there's armies as small as 100 people. And who are these armies of 100 people? Maybe there's 100 from Saudi Arabia. Maybe there's 100 from Africa. Maybe there's 100 from Eritrea. Maybe there's 100 from Pakistan. Maybe there's 100 from Brooklyn. Maybe there's 100 from here, 100 from... Who are these people? Now, all of a sudden, we're supposed to back them? So they say, well, wait a minute. There's 100,000. So there's 1,000 different groups of 100 each. That's listen to me. 1,000 different armies we're going to back now. Our Air Force is going to be used to support 1,000 different armies under no central command. Now, of those 100,000 people, I've studied this in great detail to the best of my ability. Kerry himself estimates that 25% are not to be trusted. So if Kerry says 25% are not to be trusted, that means 50% are uncontrollable Al-Qaeda and worse. So that means of the 100,000 opposition forces, 25 at the lowest to 50,000 approximately troops are murderous thugs who will go haywire in the country, rape, kill, burn churches, convert Christians. How are the doctors and the journalists and the accountants and the architects who are fighting to overthrow Assad going to stand up to the 500,000, the 50,000 murderous thugs who are war-hardened, cold-blooded, ruthless, heart-eating murderers? Do you think we'll need boots on the ground when those atrocity photos start coming out after Assad is gone? Let me take some callers here. 855-407-282. The lines are jammed, as you'd expect. This is a big time in American history. We are watching a biblical story unfold. Many of you read the Bible. Many of you think it's utter nonsense. But I'm going to tell you right now that certain biblical prophecies have already occurred, especially in the Middle East. The Bible said that the Jews will return to the Holy Land. It was predicted by the Bible that the Jews will return to their homeland. That happened in 1947. So you say, well, wait a minute, hold on, wait a minute. Okay, that's one thing. But what does the Bible say about Damascus? Well, I recommend that all of you get out your father's or your grandfather's Old Testament. And I suggest you go to Isaiah 17. As you know, I read from my Old Testament regularly on the show. Not so recently, I admit, I've become a lapsed talk show host. But in chapter 17 of Isaiah, it says right up front, 17, chapter 17, verse 1, the burden of Damascus. Behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. The cities of Aurora are forsaken, there shall be for flocks, which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The fortress also shall cease for, and he goes down the list, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall come to pass in that day, etc. So that is what's said in Isaiah 17 and the burden of Damascus. Damascus is taken away from being a city. And then if you read Isaiah 19, you read the burden of Egypt. And what happened in Egypt was predicted in the Bible. It says, "Behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud, and cometh unto Egypt. And the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt within it. And I will spur Egypt against Egypt." Did that not just happen? Did you not just witness Egypt against Egypt? And then Isaiah says, "And they shall fight every one against his brother, and every one against his neighbor, city against city, and kingdom against kingdom." I've got chills up my spine because I've only just begun. I've got one more Bible quote about Damascus that I found for you in this Holy Week in the Jewish Bible. And I will tell you that it's easy to be an unbeliever. That's the easy road. It's much harder to be a believer in anything in the world, especially a book written 5,000 years ago by a group of shepherds and olive growers. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan.
No.
I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo.
Uh-uh. Well, so what are you doing it for? That's the question. Welcome back to the program. What is the point? It's to punish Assad and achieve what? Kill a few hundred innocent children and women and men? I don't understand the logic of what the president said. Even if you believe that Assad personally ordered the use of the gas, and we don't know if that's true. The opposite is probably true, that if his side did it, it was a rogue element within the military, according to what I've read. He specifically gave an order saying don't use sarin gas to one of his commanders, battalion commanders. That came out a few days ago, but it was not picked up by the media. But even if Assad is ultimately responsible for the use of the gas, assuming it occurred, which you're not 100% sure, there's some evidence that some of this was staged. Long paragraph. What do you achieve by a limited campaign, no boots on the ground, and just dropping bombs for 3 days? This is not making sense. Tell me who dies from those bombs or the tomahawks. Who dies? I don't understand this. Not from a military point of view, not from a humanitarian point of view, not from a logical point of view. This doesn't make sense. Tony, you're listening to the Savage Nation. Let's go to you on KLIF in Texas. I haven't heard from Texas in a long time. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, with all at stake in the past false flags, how can we trust the credibility, interpretation, and meaning of these videos that only pull at heartstrings? Besides, they don't prove who did what to whom with what. I worry it's another trick and set up for bait and switch for a different agenda. Could have been.
Hold on. You're saying a lot that I agree with, by the way. But why are they racing to war? But you raise a different question, which is these videos. Where they come from?
Right. Intelligence community. I'm looking at them now. They're coming from the Senate's Intelligence Committee.
Okay. Very good. And is there anything odd about these videos that you have noticed?
Yeah, they're showing, they're focusing just on the children, so it's about pulling heartstrings.
Okay. All right. Only the children. Now, are the children actually dead?
But they're focusing on the children.
But are the children dead? Do you think the children are actually dead in those body bags?
No. I didn't see the body bag ones yet. I saw them wrapped with their faces exposed. It looks like they're trying to manage their temperature and prevent shock.
Well, I've read that as well. So these may be highly redacted videos that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's one man's opinion. Let's go to Florida now. WFTL, you're on the Savage Nation. Trey on line two, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I appreciate it, Dr. Savage. I'm a very skeptical of the veracity of these videos, and I'm curious as to, with all the media outlets and all the correspondents all over the world reporting live from so-and-so, nobody with any credentials was backing these videos. That's what I'm concerned about.
Right. So the videos themselves are questionable, and this is the primary evidence that Obama is using as a pretext for dismembering Syria, correct, and decapitating Assad.
Exactly. You know, and I saw the interview with Assad and Charlie Rose, and I don't know. I really don't think he did it. And I don't think he, after 700 and something days, why would he have to all of a sudden resort to something like that? I find.
Well, see, the question that was raised when the chemical weapons attack allegedly occurred, by logic, dictates that he didn't do it because he was winning the war. He had turned the tide against the opposition forces. He was clearly winning the war. And more than that, UN inspectors were on the ground in Damascus at the time of the alleged gas attack. What sane leader would choose that moment in the midst of a civil war to do a thing like this? The opposition would choose that moment to garner the world's sympathy. And if you think this couldn't be staged, if you think it's beyond a group to do this, I think you better study the history of warfare. And I remind you of one adage. All's fair in love and war. All's fair in love and war. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan. I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo. This would be a targeted strike to achieve a clear objective, deterring the use of chemical weapons and degrading Assad's capabilities.
Well, one thing is for certain, ladies and gentlemen, there won't be any tasseled loafers on the ground. That's for sure. That's for sure. McCain's loafers will not touch Syrian soil. The smiling John Kerry's loafers will not touch Syrian soil. Lindsey Graham's ballet slippers will not touch Syrian soil. No, sir. We can be sure of that. Now, what does the president mean by a limited strike, a targeted strike? Can anyone listening to this show who is a military man or woman tell me what a targeted strike means? What are the targets? I don't mean specifically. You wouldn't expect the president to put up a map and show us what he's going to bomb. But what exactly does he mean by a targeted strike? Let's start with that analysis. Just amongst ourselves here, we're all armchair generals, aren't we? Intelligent people. Think about it this way. There's no mystique about being in the military. Some men are braver than others. That's a given. But at the end of the day, the officer class consists of men who can think. This is how they become officers. Some distinguish themselves on the battlefield and rise up higher than others. And then they move ahead according to their ability to outmaneuver other people. So they can think on their feet. They can play the corporate game. But they're thinkers at the end of the day. So let's think the way they do. They're no different than us. They could wear a uniform with medals. At the end of the day, though, once they're in the Pentagon, they're just like you and I. So they're thinking, what are these targets that they're talking about in general? Now, if you're going to hit the 1,000 or so or 3,000 sites that are said to be the sites where the chemical weapons are stored, that's insane because the chemicals will be dispersed into the air and kill thousands, if not millions, hundreds of thousands of people. So they can't be the chemical storage sites themselves. Okay, so let's be logical. We're now in the war planner's room. What are they going to hit? They're going to hit what? Railway cars? Does Syria have a railway where they're going to move tanks of chemicals around? Maybe they'll hit railway lines, even if they're short railway lines from the assembly points to the outlying regions where the military may deploy these chemical weapons. Okay, so it's railway lines. That's a target. What are other targets? Well, trucks. They can degrade the truck system that would be used to move the weapons. That's another possibility. As far as degrading the Air Force, I said to you before, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that by now, Assad has most likely moved his airplanes either to Iran or to underground sites in hardened bunkers, and the planes won't be destroyed. So as far as I am concerned, I don't know what targeted strikes mean. That's number one. Secondly, I don't believe a word that is being said for another reason. I'll tell you why. Because I'm a student of history. And I'll tell you what happened in 2003. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi said he will give up his WMDs. He was threatened just like Assad is being threatened. And Gaddafi said, okay, America, I will give up my WMDs if you won't bomb me. And then what happened? U.S.-backed rebels, funded by the United States, trained by the CIA, knocked him off 8 years later. We came, we saw, he died, said Hillary Clinton with a big chuckle with her and the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Let's go to the next case that we can use as an example of what's coming. Do you remember the story of WMDs in Iraq that turned out to be a lie? Do you remember what happened with Saddam Hussein? Do you remember Saddam Hussein was told that unless he gives up his WMDs, the bombs will fall? He said, I have no WMDs, and then the bombs fell. Remember that? Well, there were no weapons of mass destruction. The only people who believed it were the neocons who were peddling the lie and Wallbanger, who made a big issue of WMDs almost up until 2 or 3 years ago. So the fact of the matter is, I've heard this play, I've seen this play before. And the threats that Obama is putting out against Assad were the same exact, it's the same scenario as was used on Gaddafi and then was used on Saddam Hussein. Both bad guys, incidentally. But let me ask you again. We got rid of Gaddafi. What's the result been in Libya? The result has been exactly what Gaddafi warned the West would happen. He said, you may not like me, I may not be a good man, or something to that effect, but if you destroy me and my central government in Libya, you will have a Somalia here in Libya. Warlords will take over Libya. That's exactly what has happened in Libya. And you can thank Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama for their Arab Spring. Number two, what has happened as a result of overthrowing Saddam Hussein? Is Iraq now a better place? Well, it is for the Shiites who have taken over the country from the Sunnis. But is it a better place for the Christians in Iraq? Is it a better place for the Sunnis in Iraq? I don't think so. So we took a side in that civil war, and what did we get for it? Well, we didn't even get a barrel of oil from one of the largest reserves on the planet. What sense did that make, Mr. Bush? It made no sense whatsoever. Now let's go to Egypt. Again, Hillary Clinton's absurd, insane, retrograde policy of Arab Springism, which I called an Arab winter within a month of watching what was unfold. What happened when Mubarak was put in prison? Well, Morsi, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, took over. Mayhem ensued as the Islamists took over in Egypt that had been our ally for 40 years. What had to happen was the Egyptian people threw Morsi in jail, backed the military, and now there's a semblance of hope for the Egyptian people. They're calling Obama a war criminal in Egypt for backing the Muslim Brotherhood. You have to read what's going on in the world to understand that what Obama is about to do to Syria has been tried and failed in Libya and in Egypt. Now, when I say failed in Libya and Egypt, it's failed from the point of view of stability and peace, but not from the point of view of establishing more power for the Islamists and a new caliphate across the Middle East, which is what many, let us say many thousands of people have come to understand, and that's why they question not only Obama's logic in all of this, if you can call it that, but where his loyalties really lie. So again, there's a lot to talk about, and the phone number here is no point in giving it to you because the lines are completely sold out. Let me take your calls and see what you think about all of this. Let's go back to the East Coast. George on WABC, what's your opinion? Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. First off, the gas is probably on its way to Lebanon by now, but as far as the targets go, the planes could be hidden, but if you destroy the airfields, the fuel tank reserves, and communication systems, then Assad cannot keep the rebels back. That's his.
Oh, hold it, wait, stop. But he didn't say that. Obama didn't say he wants to do it to not keep the rebels back. He said he wants to bomb Syria to degrade his ability to use weapons of mass destruction, meaning gas. That's what he said his goal is. You know that's not the goal.
Exactly, but there have been photographs of mortars, large-scale 70, 90-millimeter mortars that we use to propel the gas.
Now, you just said airfields, then you said airplanes, then you said runways, now you're saying mortars. How do you use Tomahawk missiles against mortars?
No, the mortars were used to propel the gas.
All right, let's say that's true. Well, how do you take out the mortars?
You don't. You can't.
All right, so we agree on that. So the idea of a surgical strike to eliminate using gas is ludicrous.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so how do... Let's say you really want to stop a military from using gas. You have to decimate the country and the military, don't you?
To a degree, yeah, but...
Yeah, you have to do what was done to Saddam Hussein. First, you have to take out his command and control centers, as was done in the early days of Iraq, too, with shock and awe, which all America watched, stayed up all night watching the bombs fall, the phosphorus bombs, and saw the city burning. We were all cheering. It was wonderful. Until we looked up and woke up from the nightmare that was Iraq, the quagmire that Bush got us into under the lie of WMDs, and it's being repeated again. So you have to ask yourself, who's really behind this? And I've been saying to you, there are several elements pushing this war. One is the military-industrial complex. You don't have to be a rocket scientist genius. You only have to be a talk show host who knows history and can put two and two together. It's the military-industrial complex. They've been starving for another war, and they got one. And they got it from the front men called McCain, Lindsey Graham, and the others. Because if you analyze the donations of money from the military-industrialists, you will see that McCain is at the top of the list. He is nothing but a pimp for the arms manufacturers. John McCain should be impeached and put in prison for crimes against humanity for what he is doing, in my opinion. And his good friend now, Lindsey Graham, should also be investigated for the money they're taking from the military-industrial complex. But that's only one part of it. They're only one part of it. If you want to go into who else is pushing it, we know. It's not a mystery. It's not even, are they? Turkey wants the bombing. Saudi Arabia wants the bombing, and Israel wants the bombing. If you read the Israeli websites like I do on a regular basis, and I will say again, I consider myself a friend of Israel, a supporter of Israel, but not Israel uber alles. It's not Israel uber alles, and it's not the tail wagging the dog. It's been 70 or more years, or close to 70 or more years, of this. And there comes a time when Israel, which has one of the most powerful militaries on earth, for whatever reason, has to defend itself. And they cannot use America as a Hessian army. I'm sorry, it can't be done. So that's another element. I know many people who support Israel don't like what they're hearing, and they're calling me names. Well, I'm sorry, but America comes first. And I will tell you why America comes first. And I'll tell it to you so you never forget it. If for any reason we are dragged into a war and become weakened by it, whether it be this issue with Syria or something else that Israel drags us into or any other nation, if America falls or America becomes so fractured that it can no longer defend others or itself, then Israel will disappear from the face of the earth. Therefore, a strong America is more important today than it ever was. And a strong America is more important for Israel today than it ever was. And for those reasons alone, Israel should not try to drag us into what may or may not be in their best interests, which becomes the next question. Would a bombing campaign against Syria and taking out Assad be beneficial for Israel or not? That's a whole separate discussion, which I'm not prepared for at the moment, but I will open the calls to you. There's only one open line. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We've also studied samples of blood and hair from people at the site that tested positive for sarin. On that terrible night, the world saw in gruesome detail the terrible nature of chemical weapons and why the overwhelming majority of humanity has declared them off limits, a crime against humanity, and a violation of the laws of war.
Well, first of all, that's not true. Doctors Without Borders, who were on the ground in Syria, who treated the wounded, said that there was no evidence that sarin gas had been used. They said that it may have been something called kitchen gas. That's number one. So how can the president tell a big lie like this when there's no validation of what he is saying from any source whatsoever? It sounds to me like a gigantic prelude to war, where the war drums are being beaten, the propaganda is being released, and the decisions have been made already. They're going to decapitate Syria. They're going to, that is, Assad will be killed or driven out of the country. No doubt he'll be killed. Then perhaps Hillary can do another war dance. We came, we saw, he died. And what? Who takes over Syria then? Do you have any idea what will follow? Do you have any idea? I mean, you know the French phrase, après moi, le déluge. Remember what the kings of old France said when the people hated the king? Après moi, le déluge. After me, the deluge will follow. That's been true in Egypt. It's been true in Libya. And what I, you know what hits me most of all of these speeches is the hypocrisy of Obama and his minions talking with such sugary tones about democracy and the rule of law and such. Here is a man who certainly has not used chemical weapons. No one's saying Obama did that. But my God, the man has violated our human rights in this country from the day he took office. He has spied on the American people. He has sicked the IRS on his enemies. He has done everything short of using chemical weapons on his opposition in this country. I don't believe a word this man is saying. He is slimy. He is slimy like an eel. I have no reason to believe a word of this of coming out of this man's mouth. Moreover, I have to tell you, I've studied this man's history. I distrust all of his motivations. He has no trust in this country. You know, that's a secondary issue here. Say like 90% of the American people oppose a strike on Syria. Well, that's for many reasons. Mainly, they don't want their sons to die. They don't want to be dragged into another war. They're war-weary from Iraq, from Afghanistan, from Libya. They hate it already. They hate the warmongering from one president after another. But when it comes to trust, do you really trust President Obama? Can anyone listening to this show tell me anything this man has done that isn't, let us say, provoked trust in you? Tell me, what has he done that's provoked trust in you? But let's put all of this aside. This may all be just rhetoric at this point. I think, personally, that the decisions have been made, the targets have been, they've been targeted. They know what they're going to do. I don't care what Syria does. I don't care what Russia does. And I don't think it'll be sooner. I think it'll be later. They're going to bomb Syria. They're going to take out Assad. They've made that decision. And there's nothing to stop them. That's what I think. And so, what will happen? I told you that Jeremiah chapter 49 verse 23 speaks of Syria. And what does the Bible say about Syria? There is trouble in the sea. It cannot be quiet. Damascus is waxed feeble. She turneth herself to flee. And trembling hath seized on her. Anguish and pangs have taken hold of her as of a woman in travail. How is the city of praise left unrepaired, the city of my joy? Therefore her young men shall fall in her broad places. And all the men of war shall be brought to silence in that day, saith the Lord of hosts. And I will kindle a fire in the wall of Damascus. You know, again, I've got chills in my ears, on my knees, on the top of my head. Inside, there's a believer. Inside me, there is a believer. Do I believe every word? Am I a biblical absolutist? Absolutely not. However, when you see that certain prophecies of the Bible have come to pass, such as the Jews shall return to the Holy Land, I suggest you read your Jeremiah on Damascus, chapter 49, verse 23, and then turn to Isaiah, chapter 17, verse 1, the burden of Damascus. Maybe your grandfather's Bible should be pulled out from underneath the Playboy magazines in your attic.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282.
The initiative from the Russians has done is said to the has given the president a victory because it has taken the it has recognized that for 2.5 years the president has used and attempted diplomacy to try to have a political solution to what is happening.
How is this one of the most powerful women on earth? How is it possible? A woman who channels her granddaughter as to whether to go to war. Yeah, bomb. Bomb. Grandma, Ninny, go to war. Ninny, bomb. Barack Obama, phrase I coined, already ripped off by at least three hosts. Do you believe Obama will back off war even if Assad turns in his chemical weapons? Do you believe so? Right now it's talk softly and carry a limp stick. That's for one, for sure. So what's going to happen now? The headline in the Debka file, which is an Israeli website which I've read for years, says this, top story, Obama promised Putin not to strike Syria after scrapping its chemical arsenal, Russian arms for Assad. Did you hear that tonight? Did you hear that Moscow is now moving more arms into Syria. So Putin got what he wanted, and now he's moving more weapons into his client state called Syria. And what is that going to lead to? In fact, Moscow insisted on a declaration from Washington saying, yes, he'll give up the weapons if you agree not to bomb. Right? So what's going to happen next? Friday, Moscow announced that the Nikolai Filchenko landing craft heading for the Eastern Mediterranean would stop off at the Black Sea port of Novorossiysk to pick up a special cargo for Syria. According to Debka sources, it will carry the first shipment of the fresh arms supplies Moscow was sending Bashar Assad. So the arms are now flowing back to Assad. This is sort of like a truce between the Israelis and the Palestinians, or the Israelis and Hezbollah, during which Hezbollah used the truce as an opportunity to rearm, refresh, and get ready for the next round of warfare. So this is very bad. If Obama really felt it's in our national interest to bomb Syria, then he should have gone ahead and bombed Syria right off the get-go. He shouldn't have paused. He shouldn't have hesitated. He shouldn't have lost the momentum, and he shouldn't have let Kerry undermine him. See, that's a whole separate little puppet game going on here. Kerry, remember, once ran for the presidency. You've forgotten all of this. I remember it all. If you think Kerry doesn't see himself as President Kerry, you're mistaken. There's another war going on, or another charade going on, and that's not only between Kerry and Obama, with Kerry undermining Obama and then pretending he isn't, and Obama trying to regain the high ground over Kerry. But behind the scenes is Hillary Clinton. Remember, she just stepped down as Secretary of State. So what are we thinking? We're supposed to think, look at this. All this happened when Kerry took over. He's not as good as Hillary. Because I, as sure as I'm sitting here, think that Kerry and Hillary are going to have a war during the primaries. But that let's not go there. Say, well, maybe we should go there. Because what you're looking at right now is in the present tense. And their advisors are looking ahead to the elections that are come up. They're going to be coming up. And they're going to run against each other, as I see it. But the big question for us today is this. Do you believe Obama will back off war even if Assad turns in his chemical weapons? I personally have no reason to believe that. I believe that the plans have been laid. I think the targets have been laid out. And I think that we've lost any advantage we may have had militarily at this time. It's going to get worse and worse. And that's really a bad situation for America. I think America lost here no matter which way we turn. And I think Obama is the worst president since Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter destroyed our national integrity, destroyed our standing in the world, undermined the Shah of Iran. It's a repeat of that, by the way. How many times have I had to teach you that? The Shah of Iran was a Western-trained friend of America. He was a brutal dictator in a land filled with Islamists who wanted to take over Iran. And he knew how to take care of them. He put them in secret prisons. He tortured them. He used Savak, the Secret Service, to do his bidding. We know all of that. It was terrible. But Iran was a stable country. Women didn't have to drive around in burqas. Women were allowed to teach school. If you can believe it, in a Muslim country, women were allowed to be modern women under the president at that time of Iran, the Shah of Iran. But that was not good enough for Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter undermined the Shah of Iran almost in the same way that Obama's undermined Gaddafi, who was not a Western type. The same way they're undermining Assad, by the way. The best comparison here is not Egypt, it's Iran. People are making comparison to Egypt. It's not a direct comparison. The best comparison is to Iran. Both were Western-educated leaders, brutal dictators, suppressing the Islamists. And what happened was Jimmy Carter said, well, that's not democracy. We need to see democracy in Iran. We hear about Savak. The left was screaming about Iran and torture and Savak. And what happened was, is Jimmy Carter undermined the Shah of Iran. And what happened then was a disaster for the entire world. Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been in exile in London, came back when the Shah was deposed and thrown out. And as a result, the virus of radical Islam has spread around the world. That's a result of Jimmy Carter's bungling. This is a direct comparison to what Obama is doing. They say, well, why is he doing it? if that's what happened. I don't think that that Jimmy Carter did it because he wanted to see radical Islam spreading around the world. I actually don't believe that. I believe that the motivations are based upon a kind of Fabian socialism, number one, a naive belief that man is good, and that if democracy prevails, goodness will come out in man. I actually believe it's along those lines. I'm not as cynical as you may believe at the end of the day. I don't have the darkest view of Jimmy Carter and of Barack Obama that you may have. I believe that there's a high degree of naivete based upon 30 to 50 years of brainwashing is what's motivating many of the thinkers around them, if you want to even call them that. In plain English, they're a bunch of academic schmucks. In plain English, to cut to the chase, a bunch of university putzes who spent their entire life in faculty rooms and at conferences with each other talking up the talk about how great socialism is and how great a democracy is, which, of course, they don't practice in their own country. Let's talk about the human rights abuses here in America. Let's talk about an out-of-control, narcissistic, egomaniacal president who has used his government against his own people. No, he hasn't used chemical weapons, Obama, but he has used the IRS to target his political opponents. Oh, yes, he certainly did. He is still using his spy services to spy not so much on the enemies of America, but on his opponents in America. He's violating our constitutional rights in this country. Many people believe that we need a regime change here, by the way, which is the undertone of why this man has no traction on Syria. They think he's a hypocrite for talking in such lofty terms about what will occur when the evil Assad is deposed or killed. Well, the fact of the matter is, many people are terrified of Barack Obama. They live in fear of his government. They lived in fear of Janet Napolitano, who was suddenly and for no apparent reason removed from the Department of Homeland Security and put in to destroy one of the once great universities in America, the University of California, of which I am a graduate. We have no idea why this incompetent dumbbell who has destroyed our border with Mexico would be put in charge of this, of a university system like that. But the bigger question is, why was she removed so suddenly? There was no announcement. It came out of nowhere. Why did they do that to Janet Napolitano? Well, that's a whole separate story. It was about a sex scandal that she was involved in and that she tried to cover up. We won't go into that right now because there's a bigger picture than Janet Napolitano's problems, let us say. The phone number here is of no value to you. The questions are many. We're not going to answer any of them to any extent this evening. But in a sense, talk radio is not only a forum, but it's also a place for you to vent. And many of us are very, very nervous right now in America. Many of us are not only perplexed, but we're actually scared. We're scared because we don't understand what our government is doing. We're scared because we have a bankruptcy that is not being called a bankruptcy. We have the very same banks that destroyed the economy in 2008, which gave us Barack Obama, still doing exactly what they did. They're trading on trades. They're using derivative funds. They're using fiduciary instruments that don't even exist. They invent them almost on a daily basis to trade things that don't even exist. They're living in a funny world with funny money. There's no fundamentals to our currency. The debt is out of control. Where will the money come, they ask, for another war? Now, that's an interesting question that I haven't even begun to explore. But it's funny, I heard it on the floor of, in one of the debates today or yesterday, they were talking all of a sudden about the sequester, where the vote has to come up very soon. I think the fiscal year begins in October for the federal government. And you know and I know what they're angling for here. Dempsey and the other war hawks in the administration, him not so much as some, at least not on the face of it, was suddenly talking about, gee, our military is stretched so thin. Gee, we don't have the money for the military. Gee, you cut so much from the military. Gee, we need the money to bomb Syria. Where are we going to get it from? Then one of the clowns said, well, we can give an emergency, like it's their money. We can do an emergency bill and give you whatever you need. Where do they get the audacity to say we can give you whatever you need when we don't have the money? Where is it going to come from? The answer is they're going to print it and further devalue our currency. These are all questions that need to be discussed in a rational way in a rational country. We are not living in a rational country. We are not ruled by rational leaders. Speaking of which, there was another election and another conservative was swept into power, this time in Norway. Last week, a Conservative Party was swept into power in Australia, primarily again on very hard Conservative lines. If we had a real Conservative candidate and we had an independent press that was not wholly owned by the government, I can guarantee you, as I sit here, I can guarantee it that a borders, language, culture leader who is charismatic could win the election in this country in the next presidential election. Can you name one such person? Because I can't. Don't tell me Ted Cruz is his name, because he isn't. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Now, if the regime immediately surrendered its stockpiles to international control, as was suggested by Secretary Kerry and the Russians, that would be an important step. But this cannot be another excuse for delay or obstruction. And Russia has to support...
Okay, let's pause right there. So already they're setting up the caveat that although Obama's a great diplomat and he's following Clausewitz... He's using diplomacy first, even though he fumbled the ball and said we're going to strike first, and then we're going to try diplomacy. Now it's diplomacy. Then it'll be a strike. They're just keeping the door open. They're saying this cannot be an excuse for delay or obstruction, which means they're going to say, oh, we tried our best, but they delayed and obstructed us, so we have to bomb now. And while we're on the way to Damascus, we're going to go to Tehran, and maybe a little bit on the way to Stalingrad. You know, a little bit more, because, look, we got a lot of gas in the tank. And it's a long round trip. Anyway, some of them want to, you know, Stalingrad, a few bombs here. Not to put boots on the ground, but just to warn Russia that they better not step out of line. Because although I'm a peace lover and a Nobel Peace Prize winner, I've got to show I'm really a tough guy. So you see, either way, this man has so bungled the situation that we've lost a great credibility as America. But there is good news, which is that he didn't bomb. And the other good news is that they knew they didn't have the votes for tomorrow, so they called off the voting. It would have been a great black eye for Obama and the Democrats. And by the way, this is very good news for conservatives. I can guarantee you that come the midterm elections, there will be a bleeding of Democrats like you've never seen in your life. The American people, especially the important audience of the independents, have seen finally with their own eyes who these people really are. They're foaming at the mouth. Mad men and mad women. People who posed as peaceniks, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, go down the list of Democrat women. Nancy Pelosi, living in the most liberal city in America, is now suddenly screaming for bombs away. Do you understand that this is going to cost them in the midterm elections? It's going to cost them not only more losses, great losses in the House, probably in the Senate as well. Although the Senate is almost impossible to penetrate. It's so controlled, it's impossible to break in there. So, okay, conservatives are saying this is a good thing for the conservative movement. We don't know yet. It's too soon to call the score. Liberals, of course, are lying. Liberals are putting out the party line right out of, like, Communist Central, whether it's from the White House flax, which you would expect, to CNN and the other outlets controlled by the Democrat government media complex. They're putting out that, the Russian intervention by Putin was really part of Obama's master plan. Yeah, right, for sure. They're saying Obama won. That's utter nonsense. But the fact of the matter is, we don't know what's going to happen. We know that Obama was elected in part because he was not George Bush. We know Obama was elected because he posed as a man of peace. Obama was elected because he said he would rein in Wall Street. Well, he did neither. He did neither rein in Wall Street. They're more out of control than they were in 2008. Nor is he a man of peace. He is a man of war. Not only is he a man of war, but the military has been decimated under Obama, and now he's calling upon the military to do his bidding. So everything he has done is at cross purposes, not only with America's best interests, but with himself. He's going in circles. It's like a bird flapping in circles. It's a sad thing to see. And I'm not looking forward to the days ahead, to be frank with you. Something is wrong. Obama should have admitted his mistake. He should have made the speech tonight that he didn't make, saying that it's really not our business. We have no business intervening in a civil war, no matter how it may look to us. We don't want to set off a wider conflagration. And there's no national interest at stake in Syria. And I'm therefore telling the military to stand down. And I accept President Putin's offer to broker a peace. And that's the end of it. And get the hell out of there. Get the hell out of the Middle East altogether. Stop sticking your nose into a dogfight or you'll have your nose ripped off. We also see that Kerry is finished politically. Although Kerry, with the hands and the wedding ring and the watch and the elocution and the articulation and the pointing of the hand and the diplomat, he's not going to be President Kerry, no matter what he may think and no matter how vast the ketchup fortune. The most he may be is a ketchup king at the end of the day. He's certainly not going to be the king of America nor king of the world. Let me take a couple of quick calls on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Joe on WABC in New York on the Savage program. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Mike. I'm going to abbreviate my point. It's late in the show. Kerry, we got to impeach you. And it should be a warm-up impeachment because we're going to go impeach Obama if he overrides Congress and launches one Tomahawk cruise missile into Syria.
You actually think there'll be an impeachment hearing with this spineless Republican Congress? Do you think John Boehner is the man to do this? John Boehner went along with bombing. You forgot what Boehner did? Boehner should be thrown out of power immediately. If we had a legitimate opposition party, Boehner would be gone by now. Why? Because the minute Obama said he wanted bombs away, Boehner said we want bombs away. Right away. He didn't say I oppose it. Never forget what the Republican leadership did. They backed Obama with the bombing. So don't look to the Republican Party for an answer. You're not going to find it. Limited strike, my eye. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a limited strike when you use the U.S. Air Force. What is he going to break? Who is he going to kill? Never forget what a military is for. It's to break things and kill people. Did you understand what I just said to you? This is not a cop going in with a nightstick and a can of mace to break up a fight, a bar fight. This is a tax squad going in with machine guns blazing to break up a bar fight. There are innocent people in that bar. They're going to get hit by the ricochets. They're going to get hit by the flying bullets. Make no mistake about it. This is not about bobbies in helmets going in with mace and nightsticks. This is a tax squad going into Syria with machine guns blazing, and people will die. And then what are you going to say? What would you say at that point when Russia shows pictures of the dead Syrian children who were killed by American bombs, the hospitals that will be hit, the orphanages that will be hit, the old age homes that will be hit? What are you liberals going to say then when your Messiah is seen for the false god that he always has been?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, look, you've just heard President Pinocchio Obama's speech. The nose is getting longer by the day. Now he's suddenly Mr. Diplomat from bomb, bomb, bomb. Look, you know my saying, don't you? Pinocchio Obama, which is, well, who was it who said, walk softly and carry a big stick? That was Teddy Roosevelt, right? Well, it's been changed a little bit under Obama, too. Let's see. Talk loudly and carry a limp stick? Does that work for you? Because now the president is saying, hey, wait a minute. We don't have to vote. Let's let diplomacy see if it can work. Right. And by the way, Secretary of State Kerry, the biggest doofus that ever inhabited a blue suit, now claims credit for Syria weapons proposal, even though he said it by accident and Putin jumped on it. Incidentally, people are saying Putin deserves that Nobel Prize. In fact, Obama, if he was a gentleman, would send it over to Putin tonight along with a bottle of Polish vodka. Well, I'd say he should send it over with a bottle of American vodka, and let's call it a day. In one of the most astute diplomatic maneuvers of all time, Russia's ex-KGB chief, President Vladimir Putin, has saved the world from absolute and certain disaster, right? What did he do? He did it without the ego and without the strutting and without the booming voice of Pinocchio Obama. or of the man in the blue suit with the big jaw and the hooded eyes. But guess what? By accident, or was it not accident, Putin has possibly saved the day. And you know the rest of the stories. In just 24 hours, an offhanded phrase that was thrown out by Kerry, picked up by Putin, became a Kerry proposal. How's that to run a State Department? Now it's being called the Obama Peace Plan. Wow. They should give him a second Nobel Peace Prize for this. This is amazing. This is amazing. It's amazing to me how this works. Meanwhile, we don't know where this is going to end, truthfully. Let's not get too giddy about the war not happening. You know, we don't really know what's going to happen. We know this is a president who not only leads from behind, he's always behind. But then if you're off on vacation, whether it be in Africa, Martha's Vineyard, or on the golf course, I guess you still can't figure out how to be a president. Well, there's a lot more in the news. If you go to michaelsavage.com, you'll find the other stories that we haven't gotten around to today. But here we go. Guess who wants the U.S. to bomb Assad, the Syrian rebels? Right. London Telegraph, flailing Obama slumps to the lowest rating of his presidency. Really? Syria says yes to Russian chemical weapons deal. Benghazi whistleblower has been punished for speaking out. Syrian rebels, meanwhile, are forcing Christians to convert to Islam as they take over villages. 13 Democrats have been charged with embezzling $16 million in federal grants. Really? Reverend Wright's daughter is one of them. Oops, the polar ice cap grew 60% in 1 year. All you global warmingists, you better get out your mucklucks. What else is in the news on michaelsavage.com? Well, let's see. RFK Jr. slammed Sharpton and Jackson in the diary. He called them, well, let's see, this is good stuff. When you got a lib attacking another lib, it becomes very good fodder for independent conservatives. RFK's secret book slams Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and Governor Cuomo. Let's see what he has to say about this. It's good stuff. Here is what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had to say about Jackson. He said, the Revs Jackson and Sharpton, quote, give me the creeps. He writes it in a July 5th entry, quote, Al Sharpton has done more damage to the black cause than segregationist Alabama Governor George Wallace. Sharpton has suffocated the decent black leaders in New York, he says. His transparent venal blackmail and extortion schemes taint all black leadership. Huh? How do you like that? He goes on to call Sharpton a buffoon who has never escaped the stench of his advocacy for Tawana Brawley, the black Dutchess County teen who made up a story about six white men raping her in 1987. Really? That didn't stop Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric from giving this charlatan street thug a job on MSNBC. Shame on General Electric. Go bust the light bulb. He writes that Jesse Jackson has a desperate and destructive addiction to publicity. I am quoting now. He recalls that Jesse I. Jackson, at labor leader Cesar Chavez's funeral, pushed Cesar's friends and family out of the way to make himself lead pallbearer. I rest my case. Let's begin at the top. I have a couple of questions. Is Russia's offer to help Syria give up its chemical weapons a fake? Is it a Russian ruse? Or let's go to the broader picture. Is it all a fake? Is it all a fake? Because we know we can't trust Putin, given that Putin is a former KGB chief. We also know we can't trust Kerry, because Kerry is a known liar. We also know we can't trust the word that comes out of Obama's mouth, because he's only a politician. So what is it that we, the people, are supposed to believe? That's the real question here. On the strike itself, John Kerry said it will be unbelievably small. Then the president says, no, it's not a pinprick. Then Kerry goes back and says, we don't do pinpricks. That's number one. Then he says there's a mission to take out the chemical weapons. But he doesn't say how he's going to take out the chemical weapons. If the chemical weapons have been moved to over 1,000 sites, how is he going to take out 1,000 sites other than putting special forces, meaning boots, on the ground? Huh? Does anyone have an answer to that? Now, emotionally, you may feel good when you sit at home and watch Shock and Awe as Damascus starts to burn. And you'll say, well, that'll show them. That'll show them. Wow, I feel good. That Syria is burning to the ground. How do you feel about the president's speech? Do you feel encouraged by it? Do you believe any of it? Do you think that we should be the world's policemen? You know how I feel on it. I'm an anti-war conservative. I believe we should go to war when our national interests are threatened. I do not see our national interests threatened. Moreover, I don't trust President Obama. I have no reason to trust President Putin. I certainly know that Kerry makes things up as he goes along. But you know, at the end of the day, even if Obama did inadvertently back himself into a corner by, as I said, talking softly and carrying a limp stick. Yeah, we've gone from Teddy Roosevelt, who said, I think, walk softly and carry a big stick. Well, now maybe Obama will be remembered by this adage, talk softly and carry a limp stick. He did exactly what we all thought he was going to do. He made a speech to cover his tracks. He made a speech so that the liberal historians will make him into the greatest president since God knows. You fill in the blank. But the fact of the matter is he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He's a well-known leftist, a radical. He doesn't believe in war. And here he is trying to drag us into a war in which we have no business, in my opinion. The phone number is 855-400-7282. Let's begin with our callers on the East Coast tonight on the Savage Nation. Dan on WABC, go ahead, please.
I just want to preface this by saying I typically don't believe anything that Obama says. So that's a given. What my concern is that if we don't step in situations like this, it creates a power vacuum. And then
Let me take it what you said, a power vacuum. But I will remind you that acting precipitously can have us vacuumed by our own power, as has happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. I've heard the power vacuum argument, and I will remind everyone listening to this show that using power in the wrong way at the wrong time on the wrong, enemy can have us vacuumed by our own power. We got sucked into Iraq, and we got nothing for it. We've got bogged down in Afghanistan, we got nothing for it. And earlier than that, we got sucked into Vietnam, and we got nothing for it, but 45 to 50,000 dead and 150 to 250,000 wounded. So, yeah, we got to worry about a power vacuum, but as I say, we can be vacuumed by our own sense of power. That's what we're all concerned about, Dan. But, you know, at the end of the day, even if Obama did inadvertently back himself into a corner by, as I said, talking softly and carrying a limp stick. Yeah, we've gone from Teddy Roosevelt, who said, I think, walk softly and carry a big stick. Well, now maybe Obama will be remembered by this adage, talk softly and carry a limp stick. You can call me with your commentary, either on my commentary or his commentary, by calling the commentary line at 855-400-SAVAGE. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
And what we have to do is make clear to people that this is, we're not talking about war. We're not going to war. We will not have people at risk in that way.
Yep. Suddenly it's 1969. The world has learned nothing. And of all people, I mean, Obama learns nothing from history because he believes the world began when he was born. But Kerry, who allegedly won did win a Purple Heart for a Riverine episode, which some questioned, we won't go into that. He was there. He was on a Riverine mission. He got a scratch and got a Purple Heart for it. He should know that the Vietnam War started in the same exact way. We were told that advisors would go in. Don't you remember? Many of you don't remember. At first, it was advisors, like a couple of hundred. And then it was more and more and more. This is how wars begin. Either you see, the thing that I'm an armchair general, let's be clear. I'm an armchair general. Everyone in America is an armchair actor, an armchair producer, an armchair general. That's, we all do it. If we have a brain, that's what we do. Well, let's not fool ourselves. So the question is this. What do I, as an armchair general, think? I think that a military should be used as a last resort, not a first resort. That's number one. I believe diplomacy should be used first and foremost. In fact, it's Clausewitz who wrote that war is the outcome of diplomacy that failed. Read your Clausewitz. That goes way back, well over 100 years. War should be used after diplomacy fails. Now, Obama threatened war first, and then got backed into a corner by his own rhetoric, and now said he's suddenly a big diplomat. He's going to try diplomacy. My gut feeling is he's going to go to war anyway, because that's what they have determined they want to do. Let's just look at the issue of the chemical weapons. He said no one disputes that chemical weapons were used. Well, I'm not so sure about that. There are mixed reports coming up from various and sundry and legitimate press sources. We still don't know how many died. They keep saying 1,500, and yet Doctors Without Borders said that 450 died. That's number one. The actual gas that was used, some don't know what it is. Some say it was definitely not sarin gas, including Doctors Without Borders. And a report came out just the other day from a very legitimate source where they had monitored Assad himself in his war room, where he told his men, do not use sarin gas. Do not use the sarin gas. So maybe it was a rogue element within his own military who did it. Okay, then you could say the buck stops here. He's responsible. You can carry that line. But maybe, just maybe, that some of the rumors about the so-called opposition doing this themselves to people is also true. Why? You would put it past people who burn churches and convert Christians and execute soldiers and throw them into open pits from using gas on their own people? Don't be so sure here. And that's why I'm saying again, no matter what your instincts may be, and some of your instincts are very humanitarian and good, and we've got to do something, those are horrible images. Everyone was moved by them, everyone. But be very careful. When two mad pit bulls are fighting each other to the death, and you put your hand in between them, you're going to lose a finger, or you're going to lose your hand. And the finger or the hand in this case is not Obama. The finger or the hand is not Kerry. The finger or the hand are not the little men in the news media who are calling for blood. The finger or the hand that will be bitten and die are your sons, the men in the military. That's who's going to be on the ground. Make no mistake about it. Oh, you say, well, it's only going to be dropping bombs. Don't be so sure. And secondly, you want to talk about Tomahawk missiles? They will kill hundreds and hundreds of innocent Syrians. So watch out. The bigger picture is, who's screwing who here? Who is fooling who here? Is it Putin, who has outsmarted Obama by playing chess to America's checkers? Is it Obama outsmarting Putin by playing chess to Putin's chess? Is it Syria screwing both parties by dragging them both into a civil war? Is it really Assad? I mean, you know, don't underestimate Assad. He's an eye surgeon. Let's start with that. He's not a community organizer. He didn't just get ahead through affirmative action. Assad's no idiot. Monster, yes. Surrounded by monsters. Terrible man. But Assad went to medical school. Legitimately highly intelligent man. He didn't get where he is by being an idiot. So maybe he's playing both parties. We don't know. But I don't believe we belong there. Secondly, and probably the most important thing I'm going to tell you tonight is something I said last week, which is this. If Assad was continuing to use whatever the chemicals were used, using them over and over and over again, no question, we should go in with boots on the ground and bomb. But he's not repeatedly using the gas. This is the big lie, and this is the logical flaw in the war message coming from the idiots in the media, the idiots in the military-industrial complex, the few idiots in Congress who are paid off by the military-industrial complex, and, of course, the president himself. So listen to what I just said to you. If Assad were continuing to use chemical weapons on a regular basis, I would be right in line with, yes, bomb him, stop him, you must stop this. But they were used once. Let's take the worst case scenario. He didn't order it, his men ordered it. Okay, so it was a rogue element in the Syrian military. So what, now you punish the ordinary Syrians for a rogue element in the Syrian military? You now bomb indiscriminately and kill children, women, men, old men, people in hospitals? No, that's not what you do. I'm not exactly a pacifist, but in this case, I'm an anti-war conservative. And I will tell you that foreign entanglements are the worst thing in America's history. Almost without exception, foreign entanglements have been the worst disaster in America's history. And the exception for me has been World War II, because had Germany not been stopped, there would be no America today. Had Hitler won the war, I wouldn't be on the radio, you wouldn't be listening to a free broadcast. That was a necessary war, a wholly necessary war. There's no question about it, because our survival was at stake. For Obama to blow this out of proportion and say this is the same thing is ludicrous. Let's put it that way. This is not a situation that is very pleasant for anybody talking about it. Why is he supporting the opposition? Everyone who has studied this knows that of the 100,000 troops fighting Assad, there are 1,000 different organizations, or let us say groups. Did you know that the 100,000 people fighting Assad is roughly 100,000 opposition forces made up or comprised of 1,000 different factions. So that means that there's armies as small as 100 people. And who are these armies of 100 people? Maybe there's 100 from Saudi Arabia. Maybe there's 100 from Africa. Maybe there's 100 from Eritrea. Maybe there's 100 from Pakistan. Maybe there's 100 from Brooklyn. Maybe there's 100 from here, 100 from... Who are these people? Now, all of a sudden, we're supposed to back them?
Savage.
Let me get some of your calls on the subject. I've got some amazing callers tonight. Let's start here in San Francisco, my home station on KSFO. Dan, you've been holding. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I would like to say that in listening to the president tonight, it's more shucking and jiving, more of the same garbage. There's a vortex of stupidity in Washington, D.C., trying to drag us into a place where we do not belong.
All right, that's a sentiment shared by millions of Americans. You're not alone in that. It's very heartfelt, and it's very straight. WABC, we go to New York now from San Francisco. Eric, line six, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. I get this. He stated tonight in his speech that there will be no boots on the ground in Syria. And to me, that leaves a whole open blank slate of whether it be Iran or wherever else he chooses to go there in what direction.
You're saying that he didn't say no boots on the ground in Jordan, no boots on the ground in Lebanon, no boots on the ground in Iran, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, interestingly enough, there are boots on the ground in Jordan. There are 800 Marines, by the last report, waiting to go in, and they're sitting in Jordan. You know that as well as I do. I'm sure you do, correct?
Yeah, yes.
And there are 800, or at least, well, there's a reported number of 800 Marines. It could be 8,000 for all I know. What do I know? Yeah. There's at least 800 U.S. Marines sitting in Jordan, ready to go into Syria. So what's that all about? If that's not boots on the ground, what would you call it? Sandals on the ground?
Yes, exactly.
Were they going to run in socks through the desert?
Or barefoot.
Yeah, they're going to run. I get it. So wait, they're going to run in barefoot so that Obama's not seen as a liar. That's interesting. So they can say, well, there are no boots on the ground. We promised you there'd be no boots on the ground. They're in there barefooted. That's very good. Well, we may as well have a moment of levity because this is not a situation that is very pleasant for anybody talking about it. How are the doctors and the journalists and the accountants and the architects who are fighting to overthrow Assad going to stand up to the 50,000 murderous thugs who are war-hardened, cold-blooded, ruthless, heart-eating murderers? Do you think we'll need boots on the ground when those atrocity photos start coming out after Assad is gone? Let me take some callers here. 855-407-282. The lines are jammed, as you'd expect. This is a big time in American history. We are watching a biblical story unfold. Many of you read the Bible. Many of you think it's utter nonsense. But I'm going to tell you right now that certain biblical prophecies have already occurred, especially in the Middle East. The Bible said that the Jews will return to the Holy Land. It was predicted by the Bible that the Jews will return to their homeland. That happened in 1947. So you say, well, wait a minute, hold on, wait a minute. Okay, that's one thing. But what does the Bible say about Damascus? Well, I recommend that all of you get out your father's or your grandfather's Old Testament. And I suggest you go to Isaiah 17. As you know, I read from my Old Testament regularly on the show. Not so recently, I admit, I've become a lapsed talk show host. But in chapter 17 of Isaiah, it says right up front, 17, chapter 17, verse 1, the burden of Damascus. Behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. The cities of Aurora are forsaken, there shall be for flocks, which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The fortress also shall cease for, and he goes down the list, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall come to pass in that day, etc. So that is what's said in Isaiah 17 in the burden of Damascus. Damascus is taken away from being a city. And then if you read Isaiah 19, you read the burden of Egypt. And what happened in Egypt was predicted in the Bible. It says, behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud and cometh unto Egypt. And the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt within it. and I will spur Egypt against Egypt. Did that not just happen? Did you not just witness Egypt against Egypt? And then Isaiah says, and they shall fight everyone against his brother, and everyone against his neighbor, city against city, and kingdom against kingdom. I've got chills up my spine because I've only just begun. I've got one more Bible quote about Damascus that I found for you in this Holy Week in the Jewish Bible. And I will tell you that it's easy to be an unbeliever. That's the easy road. It's much harder to be a believer in anything in the world, especially a book written 5,000 years ago by a group of shepherds and olive growers. Diane on KSFO, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Oh, I love everything you say, but when you say you think Israel is behind the bombing, I totally disagree with you. Israel would no more rely on Obama. They know that he is posturing, you know, and you don't think they've taken the measure of him? They know he can't back up anything he does, let alone the tiny bombing that Kerry talked about. They would never rely on him for anything. So.
Well, that's because you actually believe the cover story, that they're actually not friends.
Whoa.
How do you know that it hasn't been a charade, the charade between Netanyahu and Obama? How do you know that? How do you know Obama hasn't played with Israel and Netanyahu in the following manner? Put them down to gain favor with the Muslim Brotherhood, okay? And then secretly go behind the Muslim Brotherhood's back and placate Israel by sending over some bunker buster bombs. Then go back and forth in the old imperial way that the British were famous for, divide and conquer, play both sides against the middle. How do you know that's not true?
Because Netanyahu, Israel, they're just smarter than that. That's why.
But you're assuming too much about Israel. I mean, people have this idea that Israel's this unassailable group of geniuses, smarter than everyone on the earth. I don't think that's true anymore.
It is in this case when it's there, you know, when suddenly, oh, he drops these little bombs and we're going to go after Israel. You know, that gives, you know, the Muslims, oh, whoa.
Well, all right, let me give you some of the evidence for my supposition. I again go back to, it was a think tank group last week meeting in Washington, D.C., and they were all very pro-Israel, and they were all calling for bombing no matter what happened. And they were all former undersecretaries of state and, you know, policy wonk types. They didn't care what Assad did. They wanted the bombs to fall. And I looked at them and I said, this can't be, it's so naked, it's shocking to me, Diane. And again, Diane, I have to repeat, I have said in my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, that Obama treats our friends like enemies and our enemies like friends. I agreed with you at the time, right? In May of 2011, I wrote, the president delivered two speeches on Israel in which he called for Israel to restart negotiations with its Islamist enemies, starting with borders based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps. Do you remember that speech?
Yes.
Okay, so in other words, based on that, we assumed that Obama was an enemy of Israel, correct?
Correct.
Okay. But we understand that Obama is very subtle in his opposition to Israel because an overwhelming number of Americans support the Jewish state. But do you think Susan Rice supports the Jewish state?
I don't know.
Do you think that Valerie Jarrett supports the Jewish state?
No.
Do you think that Samantha Power supports the Jewish state?
I don't know.
I do know, and none of them do.
Okay.
Okay, so therefore we have to conclude that Obama actually is working with Israel, and Israel's being outsmarted because Israel thinks that if the U.S. military is used to wreck Syria, destroy the Syrian Air Force, take out his missile silos, whatever they want to eliminate, that Israel will then be safer. Is it not possible that these anti-Israel types I've just mentioned are not trying to suck Israel into an untenable position, and that afterwards they will be called to give up the West Bank and the West Bank and create a Palestinian state? That don't you think that's the end game of Obama, to create a Palestinian state immediately?
I think that's absolutely the end game, and I think is
okay. Understand that. So if they suck Israel into the Syria bombing campaign, don't you think that they're going to want to have the piper paid? Yes, I do. I do. Yes, we can. Si se puede. America and the world is stunned by the, I don't know the correct word, the egomania, the mania of the administration, the astonishing disrespect for international law. Well, he certainly knows what he thinks of Congress and the American people. Do I have to spell it out for you? Congress is against it. Reid delayed the vote. Syria has said, sure, we'll go ahead with it. We'll take Russia's proposal. We'll give the weapons to an international group. And now Obama's saying, well, he's not sure. He might or might not do it. We are all in shock and awe at the arrogance and incompetence of this administration. We are in shock and in awe at the arrogance and incompetence of the four horsewomen of the apocalypse who are pushing us into a third world war at worst, or a regional war at best, or a humanitarian disaster at the very least. Do you actually believe that bombs can be targeted so specifically that they don't kill innocent people? Are you that naive to believe that the military could do such a thing? Even an assassin occasionally kills innocent people with a handgun. You're telling me a bomber or a Tomahawk missile is that accurate? That they know it's definitely not going to kill an innocent Syrian child who had nothing to do with chemical weapons or a civil war? Do you want your sons or daughters on a frigate off the coast of Israel or off the coast of Syria to be responsible for killing innocent children in Syria because you have a lunatic in the White House and warmongers pushing him? Would you be proud of your son who came home from the U.S. Navy and said, Mom, I was involved in bombing Syria? Would you be proud of that child who fired missiles indiscriminately into a civilian population like the Nazis did in Guernica before World War II? Because that's what it would be. It'd be just like Guernica. It'd be just like Guernica practicing, using people for target practice. That's one man's opinion. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan.
No.
I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo.
Well, so what are you doing it for? That's the question. Welcome back to the program. What is the point? It's to punish Assad and achieve what? Kill a few hundred innocent children and women and men? But even if Assad is ultimately responsible for the use of the gas, assuming it occurred, which you're not 100% sure, there's some evidence that some of this was staged. Long paragraph. What do you achieve by a limited campaign, no boots on the ground, and just dropping bombs for 3 days? This is not making sense. Tell me who dies from those bombs or the Tomahawks. Who dies? I don't understand this. Not from a military point of view, not from a humanitarian point of view, not from a logical point of view. This doesn't make sense. Well, one thing is for certain, ladies and gentlemen, there won't be any tasseled loafers on the ground. That's for sure. That's for sure. McCain's loafers will not touch Syrian soil. The smiling John Kerry's loafers will not touch Syrian soil. Lindsey Graham's ballet slippers will not touch Syrian soil. No, sir. We can be sure of that. Now, what does the president mean by a limited strike, a targeted strike? Can anyone listening to this show who is a military man or woman tell me what a targeted strike means? What are the targets? I don't mean specifically. You wouldn't expect the president to put up a map and show us what he's going to bomb. But what exactly does it mean by a targeted strike? Let's start with that analysis. Just amongst ourselves here, we're all armchair generals, aren't we? Intelligent people. Think about it this way. There's no mystique about being in the military. Some men are braver than others. That's a given. But at the end of the day, the officer class consists of men who can think. This is how they become officers. Some distinguish themselves on the battlefield and rise up higher than others. And then they move ahead according to their ability to outmaneuver other people. So they can think on their feet, they can play the corporate game. But they're thinkers at the end of the day. So let's think the way they do. They're no different than us. They could wear a uniform with medals. At the end of the day, though, once they're in the Pentagon, they're just like you and I. So they're thinking, what are these targets that they're talking about in general? Now, if you're going to hit the 1,000 or so or 3,000 sites that are said to be the sites where the chemical weapons are stored, that's insane because the chemicals will be dispersed into the air and kill thousands, if not millions, hundreds of thousands of people. So they can't be the chemical storage sites themselves. Okay, so let's be logical. We're now in the war planner's room. What are they going to hit? They're going to hit what? Railway cars? Does Syria have a railway where they're going to move tanks of chemicals around? Maybe they'll hit railway lines, even if they're short railway lines from the assembly points to the outlying regions where the military may deploy these chemical weapons. Okay, so it's railway lines. That's a target. What are other targets? Well, trucks. They could degrade the truck system that would be used to move the weapons. That's another possibility. As far as degrading the Air Force, I said to you before, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that by now, Assad has most likely moved his airplanes either to Iran or to underground sites in hardened bunkers, and the planes won't be destroyed. So as far as I am concerned, I don't know what targeted strikes mean. That's number one. Secondly, I don't believe a word that is being said for another reason. I'll tell you why. Because I'm a student of history. And I'll tell you what happened in 2003. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi said he will give up his WMDs. He was threatened just like Assad is being threatened. And Gaddafi said, okay, America, I will give up my WMDs if you won't bomb me. And then what happened? U.S.-backed rebels, funded by the United States, trained by the CIA, knocked him off 8 years later. We came, we saw, he died, said Hillary Clinton with a big chuckle with her and the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Let's go to the next case that we can use as an example of what's coming. Do you remember the story of WMDs in Iraq that turned out to be a lie? Do you remember what happened with Saddam Hussein? Do you remember Saddam Hussein was told that unless he gives up his WMDs, the bombs will fall? He said, I have no WMDs. And then the bombs fell. Remember that? Well, there were no weapons of mass destruction. The only people who believed it were the neocons who were peddling the lie and Wallbanger, who made a big issue of WMDs almost up until 2 or 3 years ago. So the fact of the matter is that I've heard this play. I've seen this play before. And the threats that Obama is putting out against Assad were the same exact, it's the same scenario as was used on Gaddafi and then was used on Saddam Hussein. Both bad guys, incidentally. But let me ask you again. We got rid of Gaddafi. What's the result been in Libya? The result has been exactly what Gaddafi warned the West would happen. He said, you may not like me, I may not be a good man, or something to that effect, but if you destroy me and my central government in Libya, you will have a Somalia here in Libya. Warlords will take over Libya. That's exactly what has happened in Libya. And you can thank Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama for their Arab Spring. Number two, what has happened as a result of overthrowing Saddam Hussein? Is Iraq now a better place? Well, it is for the Shiites who have taken over the country from the Sunnis. But is it a better place for the Christians in Iraq? Is it a better place for the Sunnis in Iraq? I don't think so. So we took a side in that civil war, and what did we get for it? Well, we didn't even get a barrel of oil from one of the largest reserves on the planet. What sense did that make, Mr. Bush? It made no sense whatsoever. Now let's go to Egypt. Again, Hillary Clinton's absurd, insane, retrograde policy of Arab springism, which I called an Arab winter within a month of watching what was unfolding unfold. What happened when Mubarak was put in prison? Well, Morsi, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, took over. Mayhem ensued as the Islamists took over in Egypt that had been our ally for 40 years. What had to happen was the Egyptian people threw Morsi in jail, backed the military, and now there's a semblance of hope for the Egyptian people. They're calling Obama a war criminal in Egypt for backing the Muslim Brotherhood. You have to read what's going on in the world to understand that what Obama is about to do to Syria has been tried and failed in Libya and in Egypt.
Savage.